On tech news today, the FTC says Google's not burying anybody. Spotify has taken away your downloads, if you had them in the first place. Facebook wants to give you a voice, and are e-readers dying? All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, January 4th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by you and you and you
and you
and you
and you too.
You. And you. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we put a bunch of tech stories into a popcorn pot and we heat it up and we watch them go.
And then we butter it.
I wanted to say something that had never been said before, and I succeeded.
Yes.
I think you did.
Keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the News Fuse. After a two-year investigation, regulators in the U.S. are forcing Google to make some changes to the way it presents search results and runs its search advertising. But Google was found not guilty of deliberately burying competitors in its search results. The FTC did find fault with Google's Motorola Mobility phone subsidiary, which used essential patents to try to block competition and extract payments. We'll talk about a little bit more about what this all means later in the show.
Remember that rumored Apple Waze deal way back yesterday? MG Siegler over at TechCrunch says that's just not happening. He cites multiple sources close to the situation and makes the point that companies talk all the time, so there's a chance Apple and Waze held talks, but as multiple sources say, no deal is in the works.
You know, CNET says they have sources, too, that say the same thing, so...
These sources just talk.
Yeah, you know, it depends on the source, I guess. Spotify has stopped the sale of music through its streaming service in regions where it was previously available. Free and premium subscribers are now met with the notice, we're no longer supporting new download purchases on Spotify. Then a pop-up window sends you to a FAQ on the company's support site. Older downloaded music will still appear in your library and it'll still play, although once it expires, you're probably not going to be able to play any of it anymore. Spotify claims this is going to help simplify the service and make room for new features.
If you've been going through Steven Sinofsky withdrawal, fear not. The former Windows head is back online as he announced a new blog called Learning by Shipping. His first post weighs in at a fight and trim 764 words. Sinofsky makes it clear that the blog won't be about specifics or the past regarding Microsoft. Learning by Shipping will focus on the how and why of building products.
Facebook's iOS and Android Messenger apps have a new option next to texting and sending photos to friends. Voice. A new record toggle now shows up that can be pushed and held to record voice messages and then send them to your Facebook friends. Facebook is also beta testing a new VoIP calling feature within its iOS Messenger app for Canadian users, letting users make peer-to-peer connection and then make calls over data.
Apparently, cars are consumer electronics because both Audi and Toyota confirmed they will be showing off cars with self-driving features at CES. Audi says one of its cars would be able to find a parking space and park itself without the driver behind the wheel. Toyota's car will use camera and radar equipment to spot other cars and road markers.
Google released some data breaking down which versions of Android are in the wild. Based on the number of Android devices that have accessed Google Play within a 14-day period, ending yesterday, Gingerbread now accounts for less than 50% of Android devices. It's 47.9%, so hey, it's less than half. Jelly Bean is now on more devices, 10.2%, compared to last month's 6.7%.
Several Sina Weibo accounts of reporters and activists have been shut down. Sina Weibo is China's Twitter-like service. One of the shutdown accounts belongs to a reporter who shed light on corruption and abuse of power in Chongqing. Ran Yunfei, an activist who satirized the government, says he received no explanation on why his account was closed. Recently, the Chinese government required Weibo users to register using their real names.
The leader of BitTorrent group Imagine received a five-year prison sentence yesterday. Jeremiah Perkins was the sysop of the group that had released a large number of movies online. The Imagine group was dismantled by the FBI back in 2011 after an MPAA investigation.
Corning announced it's going to demo Gorilla Glass 3 at next week's CES. The newest Gorilla Glass is supposed to be 3 times more scratch-resistant compared to the previous generation. If you weren't aware, Gorilla Glass is used on all kinds of phones and tablets.
Gosh, you just scratch it up now. It'll be hard to make a mark.
Well, yeah. I mean,
they need a feline test.
I'm just really hoping that they always have the craziest test. So I'm hoping they actually bring a gorilla this time. Just bring it in. Let's go. Let's see you try to smash this.
Oh, I think a cat could do more damage. Hey, to get into some of the discussion stories of the day, we have none other than our very own Brian Brushwood of the Twit Network to help us out. Hey, Brian.
Hey, man. Good to see you guys. I was actually just going out for a run when I got the word that you guys needed a last-minute pinch hitter, and so I'm thrilled to be here.
No, awesome, what are you talking about? You were our first choice from, you know, since last year.
I'm the ugly girl at the prom, and after you turned down everyone else, you came to me, and that's I'm okay with that.
Luckily,
it's a good thing you were available.
You blossomed into quite a swan, Brian.
I was going to say, at least the ugly girl was available.
Shoot. We mentioned, good to have you, and thanks for coming on such late notice. Usually, Darren Kitchen is with us on Fridays, and he'll be back next week. We talked in the news views that we try to drill down what kind of went on between Google and the FTC. The judgment happened during our show live yesterday, mm-hmm. So we did our best to parse it while we were talking about a bunch of other stories. But now we have a better, bigger picture.
Yeah, we got a big full picture here. So Google and the FTC settled their 2-year investigation. On the search bias issue, the FTC found Google did not favor its own properties over competitors and search results, and that the reason Google's products were pushed higher was to improve user experience. It wasn't to remove competition, so the search results will stay pretty much the same. You'll see Google properties up top. FTC did have an issue with Google's Motorola division, as Sarah mentioned in the news views, saying Motorola, back before Google bought it, said it would license its patents on fair, reasonable, non-discriminatory terms, but then Motorola changed its mind. That caused a bunch of problems. Now Google has to license the patents on FRAND terms, and Google's also agreed with the FTC. It's going to seek to resolve standard essential patent disputes using a neutral third party before injunction. So they're not going to just start screaming, hey, you guys have to take those products off the shelf. We're going to talk to a third party before any of this happens. And all of those things are legally binding, meaning if the FCC sees, they'll be checking on Google. And if Google does not abide by these terms, they could be fined. They could face other sanctions in the future. Also, Google made some voluntary changes. So this is separate. This is not legally binding. But sites can remove content from specialized search results pages. Advertisers will be able to mix and copy ad campaign data within third-party services that use AdWords API. And, I mean, so all this happens. Microsoft, of course, has an opinion about this. They had their their VP and Deputy General Counsel, Dave Heiner, writing a long blog post, Sinofsky style, really long, and he's calling the FTC investigation a missed opportunity, so the FTC didn't adhere to its own practices in looking to industry input on proposed relief. He also had an issue with the way Google spun this story. Google said something like, Google services are good for users and good for competition. That's the basic of the FTC investigation. I guess, Brian, what impact do you think the settlement's going to have on Google and its users? I mean, does this do anything for their image?
Well, first of all, I think that Google's doing a masterful job of shaping the narrative on this. When I see, obviously they got cleared, and that's sort of the end of whether or not they're guilty, at least from a legal standpoint. But this whole time I'm watching it, it seems like this is echoes of what we saw Microsoft go through a decade ago, or a little over a decade ago, with when they were being accused of using monopolistic practices with Internet Explorer. The difference is that Google has shown remarkable brand savviness. I guess the word was that Microsoft, previous to their troubles with being a supposed monopoly, were before then, they had virtually no lobbyists. And afterwards, they got really smart and they started hiring a bunch of lobbyists. I don't know how many lobbyists Google has, but it's obvious that they are managing the growth from the scrappy underdog to being a dominant force. And they're being much more Southwest Airlines from a brand perspective than Walmart, because they're getting big and they're getting number one, but they're able to manage their reputation as being very consumer oriented and always having the interests of the end user at their hearts. Now, whether that's true, I don't know, but certainly I think they've done a fantastic job of managing that expectation.
Sarah, do you think that Google's results are going to change much to the end user? Because the way it looks like, the finding FTC saying there's no search bias, that seems like you'll be seeing Google stuff on top. Do you think there's going to be a big perception change?
No, I don't. I know that that we follow this stuff, and obviously viewers and listeners of TNT are interested in what's going on here. I don't think the majority of users are paying attention or will see any difference, particularly because Google doesn't have to change the way that it's, you know, it was accused of burying competitors. FTC says, nah, we don't think you were. And then Google says, we'll make a few changes on our end. This is not stuff that that a regular consumer is going to see. You know, something that has to do with Google AdWords API that applies to advertisers, that's not going to change the experience, you know, for anybody who's casually using Google on a regular basis. The FRAND stuff, Standards Essential Patents, that'll be kind of interesting. I mean, it behooves Google to just play really nice, to use the third party, to not try to get around this. You know, Motorola Mobility is sort of at fault in the beginning. This is something that Google acquired. So, you know, I guess you could say the company was in the wrong for kind of absorbing what was already foul play at the get-go. But it seems like Google is probably like wiping their brow, their collective brow, saying, thank goodness, this could have ended up a lot worse. They skated through this.
I think you're totally right. I think for the end user, they're not going to see much of a difference. And even if Google had to remove things or change things slightly, it just means that to people, Google still has the best results because they're seeing the stuff up top.
Right.
And it didn't appear to, at least when I was looking at this story all of last year, it just didn't seem like Google's results were coming up top because they were pushing down other people. It's because they acquired the top companies, like mm-hmm. when they bought Zagat or they bought the travel, I forget what the travel company is called, but they bought a bunch of ITA.
Yeah.
They bought that data. They just bought the best. So it makes sense for those things to show up top because that's for the user.
Exactly. Well, we will obviously we're going to have to revisit this because some things will be the FTC is obviously going to be watching very closely and make sure that Google is playing nice with these new legally binding rules. So we will revisit it whether we want to or not, probably sooner than later. Hey, but let's talk about Sony. Sony might be buying a new service. It's kind of exciting.
They might be rolling out a new one. Variety is reporting that Sony is in active negotiations with at least two major content companies about licensing their channels for a package that could roll out in the U.S. later this year. So Variety is saying the Sony's talks are like Intel, so they're as advanced as Intel's. The service would give you a package of channels, like basically what cable and satellite gives you. There's no plans, as far as they know, of a la carte channel subscriptions. But it also means Sony's got to put up a ton of money to get these content companies up there to start the venture. Brian, this is only rumored at this point, but would a move like this, with Sony delivering channels to whatever box, would this make financial sense or make any sense for Sony?
Oh, absolutely. Whether or not from a branding perspective, it makes any sense, I don't know. Because when you think of Sony, you don't necessarily think of a dominant brand that you would get your Discovery Channel delivered to you through. But as we talk about this on Frame Rate, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it on Monday with me and Tom Merritt, but we're going to see more and more virtual cable operators that offer more targeted services. One of the problems you have with basic cable right now is that the big problem is you have everybody who doesn't care about sports subsidizing the people who are paying for sports. Sports is the dominant 800-pound gorilla in the world of cable, and it's going to take virtual MSOs like this that offer packages that are much, much cheaper, that cut out certain things that people are tired of paying for that they don't ever watch. Now, they've said explicitly in this article that we're not talking about a la carte services where you get to choose, I want this channel, I don't want that channel, but we could be talking about a situation where they say, look, we know the kind of people who play Sony PlayStation or who, you know, would buy this service. And we think that these are the 20 channels they want and the other 200 they could care less about. And so I think this is going to be great for consumers. This is part of the cord cutting opportunities that we're seeing from an infrastructure standpoint, it's kind of ridiculous that we're continuing to shoot so much content over dumb pipes when we now have the opportunity with broadband to give targeted content to specific users. And I think that this is just one of many people trying this on for size. And it's going to be a good next few years for folks like you and me.
Sarah, I mean, Sony's been kind of like they've been wandering in the desert, it seems like, for a while. They have not been able to be a major brand like they used to be.
Yep,
they used to be a fantastic brand. They used to be like, you know, it said Sony was fantastic. With this kind of move, would this be like, oh, well, I totally want to buy a Sony TV because I'll get this service on top of it? Is this the kind of thing Sony needs to do to bring themselves back into prominence?
It's possible. I know, Brian, you sound pretty optimistic about this sort of thing. You know, if this is truly not an a la carte option where I can't pick and choose, which in the best world, that's what I would be able to do. If I get 20 channels instead of 200 and maybe it costs me a little less and it's more targeted to me, that's great. But I'd love to know what those channels are. I mean, this is all hypothetical right now. I mean, would they all be, I don't know, old movie channel? It's like, what would they be exactly? It would just really depend on what the bundle was.
Right. You're 100% correct when you're saying that the content is king. It doesn't matter structurally that this is going to be an over-the-top network versus a virtual network as opposed to one that uses the dumb pipes. It all, just as in the console wars, in the end, it all came down to what system had the games. This is going to come down to what MSO has the channels. Yeah. And if the channels are the right ones, then they'll have a winner.
The Beatmaster in the chat room is pointing out that Sony's got Sony Pictures and Sony Music, so they would have that content potentially in this as their own offerings. But the other thing is, when I was looking at the story, I'm like, Sony already, they're like, oh, what about the infrastructure? They have the PlayStation 3, and they have the PlayStation Network in general. To say that, look, we already have the box. It's already in your home. It's sitting there waiting. I know the Xbox has done this with a bunch of content partners, but Sony has this incredibly powerful machine just sitting around, or the televisions. They bought that technology from Gaikai as well. They bought Gaikai, that is, the cloud gaming service. They could just be pumping things to dumb machines all the time. And I think this could be a huge move for them because Kazuhirai's got to do something with Sony. He figured out a way to actually get, I don't know, Sony movies on a Sony bundle with a Sony television, which was a big deal. If you could get your PlayStation with content, I think this could be pretty huge.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear more about it. Sony, yeah, you know, let's have Sony out of the desert.
Out of the desert, you think?
Let's give Sony Google Maps. Stop using Apple Maps, Sony. Get on out of that desert in Australia and make a good TV service.
Let's
try reference that to yesterday's show. Hopefully you watch every day. And so, yeah, I didn't have
it
to
all
explain
makes
that.
Sense.
Something that is also possibly wandering the desert a little bit is the old e-reader. Yeah, yesterday we talked about Barnes & Noble's rather weak 2012. They released some numbers yesterday and said we pretty much did not have the holiday quarter that we were looking for. Market researcher IDC has estimated 2012 global e-reader shipments, so this is worldwide, at about 19.9 million units, which is down 28% from 27.7 million units back in 2011. Now, IDC's 2012 tablet forecast is 122.3 million units, so 122 versus 19 for e-readers. Obviously, it's really skewing tablet. IHS iSupply had some similar numbers, kind of looking at the same sort of data. Numbers are a little bit different, but the trend is the same. E-readers, iSupply says, pretty much peaked in 2011, and they estimate that by 2015, unit sales of dedicated e-readers to be down to about 7.8 million, so continuing to fall. I think, we can go around the horn here. There's a few things going on. I think number one is a dedicated e-reader, much more than a tablet, kind of just has to seem like a book. So if you've got an e-reader that, pardon me, still works, the screen looks good, you can, you know, read in the sunlight and read in the dark, you know, now we've got sort of night lights, and there have been some innovations, pages turn faster, the e-readers are thinner and lighter, that sort of thing, but for the most part, you have less of an incentive maybe to get the best of the best, the way that you do with a tablet. So people might just be hanging on to their e-readers that work pretty well for longer periods of time. The Pew Research Center conducted a poll recently and found that 23% of Americans said they had read e-books in 2012, compared with 16% in 2011. So the number's going up. It's not as if people just thought, well, e-readers were fun for a while, but I'm just reading less. They're reading more. And I assume they're just reading more on tablets because tablets can be an e-reader and can be your music collection and can be a video player and your browser and almost anything else, depending on the tablet. Brian, I'll start with you. Does this make sense to you? Is the e-reader too much of a niche? It does one thing too well thing? And we'll see it decline?
I think this is a case where the e-readers do exceptionally well that which need not be done at all. What they do is they mimic the experience of reading words printed on a page. And that's the big reason, you know, when 5-6 years ago, when the thought of reading on a mechanical device, you're like, oh, I like books. I'm a book person. I like print on paper. And so they're trying very hard to mimic that. But I think we're seeing a changing demographic. You know, we got kids who are growing up and they expect to do the majority of their reading on other devices. And there are limitations to this kind of device. Now, we may see an e-ink style tablet, and they won't even call it an e-reader, something that gives you the aesthetic of printed words on paper, but it has the functionality of, you know, a Nexus 7 or of an iPad. And the problem is now we're starting to see the limitation of e-readers. And if I'm going to spend, $69 on a Kindle reader or $150, $200 on a cheap tablet, I'm going to go for a cheap tablet. And that's okay, because the number that we should be paying attention to, I think this whole focus is a little bit misguided, because do we really care whether people read books on e-readers or on tablets as long as they're buying books? It's content that is king, and we're seeing the shifting demographic. We have most college students now if they're going to be taking notes on their books, they're not going to want to get their textbooks on e-readers. They're going to want them on tablets because they're interactive and they can preserve their notes and they can give rich, detailed interaction in there. And that's fine, and that's good. And to me, this is an indication of all of us becoming more tech savvy. And as long as we continue to consume more ebooks, I could care less about what the format is. And I'm not going to shed a tear for the loss of ebook readers as we shift over to tablets. I think tablets are going to be better for everybody in the long run.
Yeah,
I think Schwartz hit on a great point here. People are buying more and more ebooks because the thing is, Amazon and Barnes & Noble, they've all made apps available for everything. So the point is, those companies are making money no matter what. What technology actually delivers the content, I don't think they care about. But the thing is, these readers haven't had like their HDTV moment, right? There's no like, what's the incentive to get this? We've seen color e-readers for years at CES. It's never come out. They would be fantastic for comic books. And then the tablets started catching up to the point where you could read comic books and these other graphic intensive things like textbooks on a tablet. And these tablets are getting cheaper and cheaper. So the incentive to make a fantastic color with a e-ink screen that lasts forever, it just seems to be dying off very, very quickly. But it just hasn't had this, what am I going to buy and why am I going to upgrade? Because it all kind of looks the same, that same black text on that gray background. Even the paper white, it tries to do a good job with making it more like paper, but it's still not the same. So I think people are willing to go, as long as this doesn't appear exactly like paper, there's no huge incentive to upgrade. And these companies are making money on the book sales anyway.
Yeah, single-use devices will always have their devotees, the people that swear by them, like ebook readers. But by and large, haven't we proven with technology that we like convenience more than anything?
Yeah,
and
we want it all bundled in.
What's more convenient than having a device that does all these things as opposed to a single-use
That's a really
thing.
Good way to put it. What's the phrase? Convenience trumps fidelity. And e-ink readers provide extraordinary fidelity. It feels like you're reading a book, but the convenience of having books, even on your smartphone, I'll read a book or parts of a book here or there if I just want to pick something up. And being able to have it in the ecosystem where you can read it on all your devices, I think just shifts everything. It's too convenient. It's like the fact that I haven't pulled out my DSLR to take a single picture of my kid because I have my iPhone on me all the time.
Yep.
I mean, that doesn't make me use my Swiss Army knife when I have to do things with tools, you know? I mean, like, I still have an e-ink reader because I want to just read. The thing I found out is that I'm not, like, I want to write a note. I want to, like, write a little highlight or something. But this thing is so limited that all I can do is continue to read. What a crazy idea. So it actually makes me focus.
Yeah, that's so true. Like, you don't get distracted by notifications.
Like, I'm like, oh, and then something else can. Maybe I should listen to music while I'm reading this on my Kindle app. Yeah. It's like, no, I'm just looking at the Kindle. It doesn't do much else. So that'll do it.
That's true.
It's a lesson in discipline, the e-reader. That's why it won't die.
It'll discipline the undisciplined.
It'll help you focus in life.
Right.
Something that doesn't help me focus at all is Facebook Messenger. It's one of my favorite apps on iOS because it sort of strips out everything else that's Facebook and lets me text my friends without actually using SMS because it's all going over data. Facebook has introduced a new feature for the iOS and Android Messenger apps that allows you to send a voice recording. So if I'm going to go ahead and, you know, send Ayaz something, in the past, I would have the option to, you know, just write a text. I could attach a photo or I could take a photo with my camera. And now I've got, over the emojis here, a little record voice option. So then I go ahead and hold it down, say a little something. Ooh, that was close. And I can make sure that it's I'm happy with it before I send it. And then I send Ayaz a little something. So that's not actually a conversation that's happening in real time, but it's something that mimics what a service like Voxer does, for example. If anyone has used that, it's sort of short voice messages rather than short texts. That's interesting. What Facebook is also doing is beta testing in Canada. So you guys are lucky. You get to try this out. A new VoIP calling feature within the Messenger app as well. So not only do you have the little record options, but you actually have the option to make a connection, make calls without it impacting your call allowance, although obviously it will apply to your existing data plan. And, you know, so that's okay. That's sort of interesting if you want to be making phone calls and sending little notes via Facebook Messenger, which some people don't want to. But if you're already using Messenger, hey, these are kind of interesting. So Facebook launched Facebook Poke a couple weeks ago. That was obviously a sort of in response to the popularity of the standalone service Snapchat. Now I mentioned it's sort of taking on something that Voxer does. Is this a feature that you even want, or is this Facebook just saying, we will offer things that other companies offer because we can do it all?
I think leaving the voice messages just reminds me of a lot of other services. I think you can leave things on Path, or you can leave them on other social networks. So that just seems like one of those Me Too kind of things. But it wouldn't surprise me if the VoIP aspect came out of Facebook looking into making a phone. That'd been rumored for a long time, that Facebook would be partnering up with a company, have their own phone. But at this point, Facebook has figured out a way to get on like every single phone. They have like Java-based versions for feature phones. If they could offer a VoIP solution, so not only are they your internet, but they're your telephone company in some respects, I think that makes them very, very powerful. I guess the biggest concern people are going to have is, are they monitoring these? Are they listening to these? Are they transcribing these? Or what kind of data are they going to get out of
right.
this? Because they're not just doing this for the
are
goodness of their hearts.
Are there keywords that they can take out of a conversation that might help them market to you
it's
more
like
effectively?
You just talked about coffee. Do you want to see this on the right-hand rail of Facebook? I don't know what they're going to use it for, but I think Facebook just wants to be everything to everybody, and they have tons of different apps, so you can just never leave it. And that's the thing is to get data gathering.
I don't even know if they want to be everything to everybody. I think what they want to do is do everything that people who live inside their walled garden would possibly want. And I'm not the right demographic to even be addressing how useful this is because I don't. It's like it is a pain in the butt for me to just the fact that I have to sign in to answer a message is like there are so many Facebook messages that I just don't respond to because I can't be bothered to log into the Facebook app and to go to the appropriate place for it. However, I do know a lot of people who live in the Facebook world who have it open all day long and for whom this would be extraordinarily convenient, especially if it's do you know, Sarah, is this the kind of thing where it's like you're able to send – would you be able to do VoIP from a phone to somebody sitting at their PC?
Possibly, yeah. This is again. It's a beta test in Canada right now. But yes, it would be possibly something that Facebook could monetize. Right. It's sort of a Skype, excuse me, or a Vonage model. But then again, those services, I know a lot of people who are listening probably go, this is just not really that new. I mean, what is Facebook doing that's very innovative here? And it's not so much that it's innovative; it's that there's so many more people using Facebook.
Right.
Than anywhere else.
It's what we just talked about. It's convenience trumping fidelity. Mm-hmm. It's like you've got sure, everyone knows like, oh yeah, Skype. No, I haven't installed it on this computer or this app. I haven't installed it on this computer. If it's something where it's like if you're on Facebook, whether it's on a PC, whether it's on your Android, whether it's on your iOS device, and then you could just hit somebody up for, you know, we'll say it's voice over IP now, soon it's screen sharing, soon it's interactive, whatevers, then the convenience of it being ready to go is going to be huge. If you can find a structural way to remove extra steps, people always underestimate the value of that simplicity. And if they have the ability to make this connection simple between people who are inside the Facebook ecosystem, then I think this is going to be a huge win for them.
Yeah, Lopan in chat corrects me. You can't actually review what you've said before you send it, but you can say, if I said something to Ayaz and then went, I really want to send it, I can go ahead and delete it before sending. It's not immediate. So thank you for that clarification. Ayaz, you know what I want to do right now? I want to talk about next week and CES, because I know you're going and you've been paying attention to new stuff that's
going
to be there.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stories going on right now because CES is around the corner. So there's a lot of like, what are the trends that are going to show up? And then the other questions of, is CES dead? I'm going to focus on the trends because I'm going to go. I'd like to go see the place and see what's going to be there. CNN and Fox News both wrote pieces saying what to expect. I want to ask you guys, do any of them sound exciting? So I'll just list off a bunch of them and let me know what you find exciting here. Room for smaller companies like Leap Motion and Pebble, because the big players are lying low. These days, Microsoft's not going to have a whole lot of things going on. A lot of companies are going to be moving away. So you'll see the smaller companies a lot easier. Another one is supposed to be televisions that are connected to the internet. It's like, well, hasn't
Wait
this,
a second.
Hasn't this been around?
What's that?
I mean, like the one that TV.
Like the one in my living room?
Yes, you'll see more of them, apparently. Okay. Wow, so these guys are ahead of the curve.
Innovative.
Home automation is going to be a lot more popular, although I thought I saw this last year, too. Using your phone to control home security, unlock doors, conserve energy. These guys, so these are the major publications, so they're citing things like Nest being a commercial success. I'm like, okay.
Would we call Nest a commercial success? I think there's been a small adoption rate and people seem happy with them. Yeah. But it's not like we're all, you know, using our phones to control our heat. It's a ways off. Brian, are you trying to jump in?
Yeah, I'm going to defend this. I think this is a little bit like when DVD players came to PCs, everyone thought they were so dumb. Like, who's going to watch a movie on their PC? Why do I need a DVD player? CD-ROM drive is just fine. And it was a half decade that it sat there like that. And then all at once, software publishers were able to say, hey, you know what we could do is stuff a ton more video game data on a DVD. And it turns out that the whole world has DVD players that they're not using. This home automation stuff is going to show up in these appliances and nobody's going to use them. But then we're going to reach a critical mass where all of a sudden they're in everything and we have internet connected, refrigerators or whatever. And then you will be able, then there will be a place for a virtual concierge, an artificial intelligence that knows the way you like to live your life and is able to do things all at once. You got to have the hardware infrastructure, as silly as it looks to us right now and as pain as a butt as it would be to load these things up and connect them and set your preferences. But nobody's going to do any of that. But what will happen is we'll reach a point where all of a sudden you have all this crap and you could just plug it all in and it'll be the software side of thing that'll be revolutionary when it makes things super simple for you.
And Fox News also was talking about the death of the point-and-shoot camera and talking about more cameras with Android as a bad thing. I was super psyched about that. I want to see more phones, more cameras with Android.
What's bad about it?
The sentence said was Android and cameras UGH. So they don't like this idea. I don't understand why you wouldn't want to have, I don't know, a user-friendly interface on a camera as opposed to the crud that's on cameras nowadays. So I'm looking forward to that. What do you think, Brian? You don't use a point and shoot. You don't use a DSLR.
You're right. That middle of the road. Now point and shoots are stuck in the mushy middle. And what's funny is I was going to say maybe I'd get one for my kids, but I don't even think I'd do that. I think I'd be more inclined to get them a decent iPhone or something to take photos with. It's the base level of quality that you get from a smartphone is so good now. I just don't see the relevance of point and shoot cameras at all.
Another trend is supposed to be cars getting smarter. Sarah, you got more on that, right?
Yeah, actually, kind of exciting. We talk about autonomous cars and driverless cars, and Google's been testing the self-driving cars and their customized Priuses. This week, Toyota actually revealed some footage of its vehicle in action. Both Toyota and Audi have confirmed that they're going to unveil more about what they're doing with their driverless cars at CES next week. Jason, I don't know if you want to run that footage. It's very short.
5 whole seconds.
It's five whole seconds, and it almost looks like the person that's shooting the car kind of goes off to the side. I'm more interested in it. It's like
it looks like it's
what happens
to
the person
off
at the end. Whoa!
Wow, that's a preview.
Yeah, isn't that great? So the prototype of what we're looking at is a Lexus LS 600H. Toyota is calling it the AASRV, which stands for Advanced Active Safety Research Vehicle. Toyota says that its technology was developed independently of any research that's going on within Google, even though Google is using Toyota Priuses. So Toyota says, we're not working together. This is our own thing. Toyota has also... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and I believe that. I mean, it's like you read that and it's tempting to want to roll your eyes like, sure, you didn't copy Google at all. But there are structural things. Like if you're going to design a bipedal hunter, one of the things you're going to do is put two eyes facing forward to, you know, 3D assess prey. So there's certain structural things that make sense. But I could not be more excited about copycats entering the marketplace, because that's how you know that you that an outlier is being first in a trend. And Google, of course, is a huge outlier in self-driving cars. And the fact that everyone else is getting on board and getting on board fast means that, I mean, 5 years from now, we could be buying these things and being driven to work, which would be amazing.
Absolutely. Toyota has already been testing autonomous vehicles near its engineering campus, which is in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And I mentioned Audi. Audi also has plans to unveil its own driverless car, or at least how far it's gotten. The company, according to a company spokesperson, in addition to that, the car would be able to do things like find you parking spaces and park itself. Ford's one of the sponsors of the Twit Network, and we've seen these are the sorts of technologies that a lot of car companies are actively pursuing and have gotten right. To find the parking space would be pretty great, especially in an urban area where I just go like, you know, you just circle. I'm just going to be on my phone. You just figure it out. Park when you're ready so I don't have to think about it. Love that idea. But yes, I think I agree with you, Brian. We're looking 5 years out, if we're lucky, with some of this stuff. But it is very exciting to see the big companies jumping on board. I mean, a company like Toyota. Toyota is one of the largest. This is great news.
Well, and think about it this way. Like 5 years ago, where were we? We finally had the first robot car that was able to finish the DARPA challenge. I think that was in 2007, maybe 2006. But, Stanley finally proved that it was functionally possible. And now 5 years later, we're seeing not one, but several competitors in the marketplace, R&D at the high end, trying to make this stuff happen. I don't think it's unreasonable to say another half decade forward, we start seeing the very first models actually on the street, especially because this is not unsurprised. You know, legislators are making moves right now to prepare the way for these self-driving cars. And, they don't do that if something is 20, 30 years off. They do that if they know that they're going to get bit in the ass if they don't take care of something right now, because it's right around the corner.
Exactly. Hey, what do you guys say that we move on to the randomizer?
Let's get random.
Play.
Nicely done.
Ayaz,
yes.
Do you want to take this one?
Sure, why
you
not?
Were more excited about than I was.
Yes, I was excited about this because it's about Google's original creepy Android mascot. This is a Friday story. It's silly. It's from a Google Plus post by Dan Morrell showing off the original proposed Android mascots, and boy, do they look different. Now, he was cleaning up a NAS server, and he found this early mascot. Now, they were drawn as eye candy. He was going to do a presentation slideshow to say, hey, Google guys, you guys can make some apps for Android when we're starting this up. So he drew these guys. They're kind of goofy looking. You can see they're in the Google colors. And they were nicknamed the Dandroids.
They're terrible.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
Can you imagine? It's so messy looking.
They look an awful lot like Rosie the Robot from the Jetsons.
Yes, totally. They
obviously look crazy because they have the swirly eyes thing. So that's
look at the muscles on the yellow guy.
They're drunk robots.
They do. They look like drunk and sort of beaten up a little bit.
And thankfully, they were replaced by what's affectionately known as the Bug Droid. That was designed by Arena Block.
Oh, but thank goodness.
Also in the post, though, in the comments section, Dan Morrell actually explained the Android versions were going to be named after robots, like R2-D2 and other things like that. But that got dumped due to all kinds of trademark issues. Androids and desserts don't make any sense. But Androids and robots.
Isn't nicknames. Jelly Bean some sort of trademarked thing?
No, Jelly Belly.
Jelly Belly. I see.
Yeah.
Jelly Belly is the Kleenex of the sugar bean.
By which you, of course, mean that you wipe your nose on them. Got it.
Exactly. Let's see what's on the calendar. Well, there's not much on the calendar, but I guess we talk about CES.
Let's talk about CES. It's next week. Starts on Tuesday the 8th, but the news is actually it's coming all weekend, and actually I think we saw some news this week already about CES. So.
Yeah, I mean we already started talking about CES today on the show, and you're going to be at CES.
I'll be there
all next week,
starting on Wednesday. I'll be on TNT on Skype, but I will be at the show from Tuesday to Saturday, I think. It'd be exciting.
That'll be great. Yeah, you'll be able to tell us all the stuff that we're missing because Tom and I will not be at CES.
I'll bring
this
back
year.
The plague for you guys. I promise.
Oh, thanks.
You can keep that.
A lot of hand sanitizer, please, the good of Twit. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got a voicemail. Caller excited about practical applications for controlling computer screens with our eyes.
Take two. Hey, TNT, this is Stu. I was really excited in episode 660 when you guys were talking about the Tobii interface, when Sarah mentioned individuals with limited mobility and limited abilities in general. This interface is going to make their lives a whole lot easier. I'm a social worker, and I work with a lot of clients with cerebral palsy and Down syndrome and various other disabilities, and I'm very excited about the kind of access that my clients will be able to have once this thing is, you know, real and live for consumers. So thanks for doing a great job, and I'll keep listening. Thanks.
Thank you. We sort of glossed over that because I think, you know, none of us are exactly experts in the limited mobility and what this might mean for people who could really benefit from using their eyes to control their computer screens. Brian, what do you make of this? I guess accessibility is one side of it, but just sort of the fun aspect of it. Does this appeal to you?
Well, I missed the original story, so help me out. What does the eye control exactly do?
Well, it's the idea that you can control your screen using your eye movements. So
yes.
you want to go back a page or open up a certain window. It would be something that the computer can see where your eye is going and follow along.
I'll tell you what, man. There's a lot of things that you do just because they seem like a good idea, and it's not until the right application hits all at once that you're like, this is obviously the most brilliant thing ever, and why were we not doing this forever? So definitely a step in the right direction. Whether or not you see the initial applications or not, you know, the original applications for televisions involved a lot of like, we could teach classes over this thing. They didn't realize what a fundamentally different medium it was than radio. So this could be another situation like that.
I got an email from Lior. He said, hey, guys, I've listened to episode 661 and wanted to comment about the rumor of Apple buying Waze. He says, as an Israeli who follows the Israeli startup scene, I can assure you that Waze will be bought very soon, either by Apple or any other big company. That's the Israeli startup's nature. Every time those companies are being sold, the local media questions them why they were so eager to sell. And every time they have the answer, it's impossible to create a mega company in Israel. And the only way to continue growing is to be sold. That's the same case with ICQ, which was acquired by AOL, and USB flash drives like SanDisk. Actually, that's the dream of young Israelis who open these companies. They just want to be sold. The sooner the better. So Lior giving us a cultural aspect of why Waze would even be looking to be sold.
That is the same thing, though, that you could say about, I think, any company in the world. Not just that, every company goes ahead and launches a product with the intention of selling as soon as possible. But that is the exit dream of a lot of startups worldwide. It's interesting to hear that, you know, it might be more prevalent because the Israeli startup scene only takes you so far. But Waze could always be the first big company that didn't need to be sold as well. I mean, they have such huge growth right now.
Good point.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting perspective. Thank you, Lior. Also got an email from Sam in Ypsilanti, Michigan. I hope that's how you say it. Says, I think you guys, like everyone else, are taking the Samsung portrait TV teaser thing way too literally. That's the sort of portrait style Samsung TV that we have been trying to make some sense of on the shows this week. He says, let's consider it a different way. What if this is simply a tease for a new 4K TV in a traditional landscape format? Over the years, as the image quality of TVs has improved, I frequently heard Leo describe the effect as similar to looking through a window at the real world. Most windows have a similar upright orientation to the image in the teaser. Perhaps this is just implying that looking at this new TV would be like looking out the window. I worked with a lot of PR and social media types in recent years that are looking for any kind of unique angle to get people talking about their products. I can definitely see them coming up with something like this, even if it's a stretch for most of us.
I'll tell you what, I think this is actually brilliant because I think 4K has a very bad problem around the corner, which is everything you're seeing for 4K is marketing it as if it's ultra HD. And when we live in a world where most of our parents can't tell the difference between standard definition and high definition, how are you possibly going to sell the need for people to get ultra definition? And the answer is you don't sell it as the next evolution of the way you watch you know, the Avengers movie. What you do is you sell it as a fundamentally different thing. For example, call it a video window. Say now you can have landscapes on 24 hours a day and it'll look like you're looking out a freaking window.
Totally cool.
Position it. Yeah, sure. Exactly. Position it as the monitor. Like, look at you idiots. You have 8 monitors. Like right now, I'm looking at 4 monitors for this studio PC. I would love it if I could replace all of these with just one giant 4K display. There are functional ways to position this outside of watching your movies. And I think the faster people can introduce that idea, the faster they can get away from DVDs or Blu-ray content, the better.
Yeah. What tell it. That, tell Samsung. It, Schwood.
No, I wasn't a marketing there with a video window.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. We are, perhaps not thinking broadly enough about 4K. That is very interesting. All right. Well, we've come to the end of our show, TGIF version of the show. Brian Brushwood, thank you so much for joining us, especially since it was last minute.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Tell everybody, what you got going on Twit and Scam School and what's new for you in 2013.
I'll tell you what, newest thing is, of course, we got a baby, which was made possible by the fine people who founded scamstuff.com. We're trying to make Scam School, of course, is the show about what you do at the bar. Scam Stuff is about the stuff you bring to the bar. So if you need some tricky gizmos, we got it all at Scam Stuff. And of course, Frame Rate every Monday with our own Ace Detect, Tom Merritt, and NSFW on Tuesday nights.
All right. Well, thanks for being with us. And thanks to everybody who submitted to our subreddit. Technewstoday.reddit.com is where you can go to submit stories you would like us to cover on the show. Help us build our rundown every day. And even if you don't submit, you can help vote stories up or down. If it's something that's really interesting to you, get it up to the top so we are sure not to miss it. Also, if you want to submit us submissions for our best of shows, hey, it's only January.
Hey, you
but we
start
might
early.
As well start early.
We did this last year and it was a big success.
And Jason had less organizing to do at the end of the year because
it really helped.
So we're starting early. Twit.tv/best of is the place to submit your favorite moments of TNT and help us make a really good best of reel in December of 2013, which is going to be right around the corner. Monday we have Mark Turpin, the Terpsters, back on the show. It's been a while. Until then, you can write us at tnt@twit.tv. You can send us a voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll see you on Monday. Tom Merritt will be back with us then.